All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, everybody. Week 8 edition of the show. Thank you for joining us. I am Bobby Fenton here on JoeBucksFan.com as we get set for one more football game before the 2025 bye week and the Bucks heading to New Orleans to take on the Saints. Divisional game number 2, first game of the year against the Saints, and a chance to either be 6-2 or 5-3 at the bye with a whole lot of other implications as well. So we're going to get to all of it today. A big game, to be quite honest, and I don't like to say it too much and overuse the term, but this is a big game, I think, for the Bucks as they are coming off the loss on Monday night in Detroit also, which we're going to talk about today. That's all coming up on the show, so thank you for joining us. Thanks to the Joes at JoeBucksFan.com for giving me this platform. If you want to get a hold of the show, if you want to get in touch with me in any way, easy to do. Email BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com, BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo. Same thing on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. Same thing on Blue Sky, @BobbyGameDay. So with all that said, first things first, let's go to the Detroit game Monday. And I know, you know, obviously nobody ever wants to lose a game. And certainly when you're doing as well as the Bucks did to come into that game at 5-1 and you're playing another really good team and it's a clash of the Titans and a potential, you know, preview for what could be the top two teams in the NFC, blah, 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 the stuff you heard. And then you go out there and you quote-unquote lay an egg, then that doesn't feel good. And you think, oh man, maybe we're not as good as we thought and maybe the Bucks aren't cut out for this. Another primetime loss. I heard that one a lot. And let me address that one real quick, first of all, the primetime thing. Because the numbers aren't great in primetime, and I'm just going back to 2022 under Todd Bowles. This is all primetime games, Thursday night, Sunday night, and Monday night. They are now 4-10 overall in those games under Todd Bowles. That includes three playoff games, two of which were Monday nighters and one of which was a Sunday nighter last season against the Commanders. If you take out the playoff games and just count regular season, they are 3-8 in primetime, including 1-4 on Monday nights. And so that's not great, but I also think a lot of that, first of all, I think a lot of it's statistical noise. And what I mean by that is, you're looking for, is there a reason this happens, or is it just a cross-section of games? I could find different cross-sections of games at random that might have a 3-8 record, or an 8-3 record, or whatever. I will say this about the primetime games. It ain't like the Bucks are losing gimmies here, okay? I think, honestly, the biggest thing I would say it probably is just who they have played and some of the assignments they've had to cover on these games, because I'm looking at their Monday night. Again, they won in Houston earlier in the year on Monday night this year, so they're 1-1 this season. But yeah, at Detroit on a Monday night, that's tough, okay? That's a tough game. And they were a 6-point underdog in that game. So I actually should, I didn't look it up. I should have looked up their against the spread record, which probably isn't much better, but I think it's a little bit better. They did not win or cover the spread in Detroit. But I'm saying that these are tough games. 2024, last season, okay? At Atlanta on a Thursday night, Baltimore on Monday night, Kansas City on Monday. I mean, these are tough-ass games. Like, at Kansas City on Monday, you're telling me they lost? Oh, hey, breaking news there. You know, yeah, you lose games like that a lot of the time. 2023, same thing. They had at Buffalo, and then they had Philadelphia on Monday night twice because they did it again in the playoffs, and they won that one. And then going back to 2022, which is longer ago, they did win at Dallas on Sunday night, but they also had to play, again, Kansas City, Baltimore, and lost both of those. And they played New Orleans, which they won. So, and really, they're just beating teams they should beat and losing to teams they're underdogs against. And they're playing some really, really hard games in primetime. So I don't know if the primetime thing is a thing. There might be a little bit something to it. But as far as this past game now, forget about everything else, on Monday night, I'm not trying to be Pollyanna. I'm not trying to be one of those people that finds a positive spin on everything. But I'm actually kind of encouraged by what we saw Monday night. Because first of all, that game was way closer than the score indicated. And we don't do moral victories. None of that counts. This isn't college football. There's no committee. You don't have to impress anybody. Nobody's looking at margin of victory. I know that. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that was a game that the Buccaneers were still in. And by the way, played terribly, and I thought, for a lot of it, especially offensively. Played terribly. And that game was 14-9 late, and even 21-9, the Bucs had the ball. I thought the defense did a really good job on the whole. I mean, if you look at the game Monday, and I'm not going to spend too long being, at least, complain about the officials guy. But the Lions scored three touchdowns in that game which in and of itself, 24 points is not bad at all. But even the 24 points I thought they were lucky to get, considering two of their three touchdowns came off of absolute garbage illegal contact calls, both of which came on third down stops by the Bucs, both of which the Bucs thought they have gotten off the field. And honey, baby, it's hard. It's hard to go out there and stop a team, and you're jogging off the field, and then you got to turn around. No, do it all over again, first down. Whoa, you stopped them. And it'd be one thing if they were actual penalties, but both of those illegal contacts, in particular the second one on Jamel Dean, where Amon-Ra St. Brown just trucks into his chest and it's illegal contact on Dean. And even the first one, Jameson Williams, it was Parrish, right? I think it was. Jameson Williams is running an in-breaking route, and Parrish was on his outside shoulder. Receivers are taught, bore into your defender the opposite way you intend to break. So he's got his shoulder down. He's pressing into Jacob Parrish, who's running with him step for step. Then he creates separation off of that opposite pressure. When you put that pressure into the guy and break away from him, it creates space. It's fine. I don't mind Jameson Williams doing that. I'm not saying he did something wrong. I'm saying that should not be called on any planet. Both times they get stops. Both times they have to come back on the field. Both times the Lions score later. In fact, it was only a couple plays later on the first one. On the second one, that was the play before. Think about the sequence of events that happened because of that stupid illegal contact penalty on Dean. Next play, okay? Jahmyr Gibbs does his, whatever it was, 75 yards, however long it was, breaks one. Bucks run defense did a great job in this game. That is one play, and that is obviously no run defense ever wants to put that up there on film. No run defense ever wants that to be on their stat sheet. That was bad. One play, okay? But it also came after they'd gotten a stop. But aside from that one play, everybody's talking about Jahmyr Gibbs, this, that. The Bucks run defense did a really good job on Monday night, as they've been doing all season long, okay? And I know you can't take away, quote-unquote, one play. The one play counts, too. I get it. But that was a good game by their run defense. And so, both times, and after that, that's forgot the sequence of events. After Gibbs does that, it was like three plays after that, that Mike Evans, that whole thing happened. Which, if you, again, that whole sequence doesn't happen that way without that call. So I'm doing this show on Thursday afternoon. It's almost a full 72 hours later, not quite. I'm really pissed off about those two illegal, of all the things. I know there was the fourth down review, which I thought was garbage, because at the very least, it's not the booth's job to say whether he got a first down or not. If they're reviewing that and they want to review it 15 times, let alone two times, okay, you buzz down and say, here's where the ball should be spotted. And then you do that laser review. That all got skipped, right? I didn't see any measurement or anything because I thought that, you know, there was a pretty good chance he still had the first down. It definitely wasn't inconclusive. But even aside from that, and even aside from the missed leg whip and tripping, even aside from all that stuff, fine, whatever, okay? Those two illegal contact penalties were huge, and it's a different game without them. Not to make excuses, but this is why I'm still optimistic about what happened Monday. So I thought the defense did a pretty good job. They got a ton of stops. You never want to see the long run from Gibbs. He had a couple of other long catches as well. They missed holding on one of those. Servasia Dennis was back to his old self in coverage. It's just it's a problem, okay? And if you look at the numbers, folks, because I'm a numbers guy, if you look at the numbers, as far as passing EPA allowed, the Bucs rank pretty low in the NFL. And when you see a stat like that, you go, oh, well, bad secondary, right? No. The corners are awesome. Jamel Dean's playing out of his mind. He's playing outstanding football in particular. But Zion's playing well. I think Parrish has done a good job, too. I know he had a couple things Monday, but I thought, again, one of them was the bad call. Secondary's fine. Safeties are fine. Tyke Smith's playing like his hair's on fire. All right? The reason for their bad EPA allowed versus passing plays is heavily, heavily skewed toward what is happening with their linebackers in coverage, and they just haven't been able to nail it down there. Devin White, it didn't work out. He wasn't great in coverage. They've tried other guys, Britt, and now Dennis is bad at it too. I mean, they don't have a guy, and it's killing them. It's killing them. And there are guys just running wild in the middle of the field, and I'm not trying to tell professional football players how to play football, but it's just one of those things that Servasia Dennis isn't good at. There's so many times during these games that I look up after a play, and they hit a big chunk play, and there's a guy just, like I said, running open, and I'm thinking, I always tell the kids I coach, don't think of zone coverage as zone coverage. Think of all coverage is still man coverage. We cover people, not blades of grass. So you don't just, zone coverage doesn't mean you stand in an area and just stand there and patrol that area. It means if somebody enters your area, you cover the man just like any other. It just means that's your man assignment, is that person in that zone at that time. And then when they leave your zone, you hand them off to the next zone instead of following them and chasing them, thus vacating your zone for someone else to come into. And it's not easy to do at the NFL level, obviously. But so often it seems like we're covering blades of grass instead of people. We just have people stationed in different spots, and they stand there. And meanwhile, the receivers just run around them to wherever the open space is, and there's big, big chunks there to be had. So, you know, that part is a problem. But overall, the defense was solid. 24 points is all you can ask for. They got stop after stop after stop. They got turnovers. They got fourth down stops. They got third down stops. And even on the two of the three Lions touchdowns, those were drives they got stops on, had to go do it all over again. I don't want to hear about the defense. Pass rush, it's an issue, and now Hassan Reddick's hurt, yes, but they didn't do badly. Yaya Diaby strip sack fumble. He didn't do a ton after that, but he got that. Elijah Roberts was in there in Goff's face in the end zone. They made some plays, and Reddick was doing some stuff before he got hurt. I mean, the pass rush is not good enough, and it's only going to be hurt now by Reddick, however long he's out. But it's not like an atrocity either, whereas their linebacker play and pass defense is an atrocity. So, I think mainly it came down to the offense, and we all know it. I mean, Baker Mayfield said it himself. It's not like some big thing. He had a horrible game. I mean, he had one of the most inaccurate games That was the most inaccurate game he's had as a Buccaneer. Now, there are mitigating factors to this too, okay? 52.5% pressure rate for Bake, or not just Bake, the whole offense, allowed. 52.5% of the dropbacks, there was pressure, which is the most this year. The Buccaneers, and this isn't a percentage, this is a total number now, allowed the most pressures on Monday night of any NFL team in any NFL game in the 2025 season so far. Obviously, part of that is the 52.5% pressure rate allowed that I just mentioned, combined with the sheer total of dropbacks, because Mayfield threw 50 times, or whatever it was. Yeah, it was 50. And that's just from playing from behind. I thought they maybe could have tried a little harder. They weren't down by that much, and they could have run the ball maybe a little more. But overall, you know, you're down by a million. Two touchdowns, not a million. But you need two touchdowns in the third and fourth quarter. You're passing a lot. No big secret. So, I mean, and Grant Barton had a very bad game. It wasn't just the right side of the line. Charlie Heck, Mike Jordan, they weren't great in pass. Although Heck's doing it in run blocking, he's done pretty well. But in pass protection, that right side was caving in a lot. But it wasn't just them, it was Barton too. And Aiden Hutchinson does that to people. Although, you know, I thought, considering what we saw last season, I thought this was a step forward as far as containing Hutchinson. And it wasn't sacks per se like it was last year when he had like half his season sack total in one game against the Bucs. This was more just consistent pressure where Mayfield couldn't ever get comfortable. With that said, he had plenty of misses that were just on him, period. Even despite the pressure, or even when there wasn't pressure, threw a lot of bad balls. Some of them just flat out uncatchable, and some of them maybe in the technical catch radius, but still not good balls. And it ended up obviously costing them. And he, listen, with Baker Mayfield, he's a high variance guy. He still didn't turn it over a ton, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I think he's still, yeah, I'll take nights like Monday night, which are going to happen with someone like Mayfield. I'm not mad at him at all. But for all the raving we've done about him in the first six games, you get a game like Monday night, fine, no big deal. I call that earning your mistakes. Some guys have earned their mistakes. Now, certainly the quarterback can't make too many of them, and he can't make them in too many games. He can have a game like that here and there. But on the whole, I'm not big. You know, that's no big deal. I'm not worried about Mayfield. I'm not mad at Mayfield. It was a bad night for him. It's hard to win like that. And yet, that's my point, though. He was terrible on Monday night. And the offense couldn't get anything done, and they were in that. They had a chance to win. Not maybe late, but then in the second half, they absolutely had a chance to win. And especially with the officiating screwing them over, I thought they were fine. I mean, I'm not worried about it at all. Not at all. So, you know, it's one of those things that when you play teams that good over and over, you want to beat the teams you're better than, and you want to split those games against the really good teams. And they just came off a four-game stretch against good teams. They went 2-2. So now that brings us to Sunday. And this is a big game, folks. And I don't like to throw that around because it's football. Every game is a big game. There's only 17. So just by the sheer mathematical nature of it, the sample size of it, every game is big. And people, I find, fall under the trowel. This is a big game. They say it every week. So no. This one really is, though, okay? First of all, you know, we knew it was going to be a tough stretch those last four games. They got their split 2-2. All that was predicated on, okay, now you're going to beat the Saints going into the bye. You're going to be 6-2 going into the bye. So the difference between 6-2 at the bye and 5-3 is huge, okay? Number one. Number two, it's a division game, only their second. And if they win this one, they move to 2-0 in the NFC South instead of 1-1. And heaven forbid tiebreakers come into play, and I hope they don't. If the Bucs take care of their business, they won't, but we know they could. And if they lose that second Atlanta game and all of a sudden we don't have the head-to-head tiebreaker and it goes to division record, and Atlanta's already got a couple division losses, to get this one and be 2-0 in the NFC South would be a major, major step toward the ultimate goal right now. And we can talk about all these record aspirations of, I want them to finish 13-4. I think 12-5 is the minimum. Whatever, we'll worry about that later. Number one, win the freaking NFC South some way, somehow. Maybe you're a 4 seed, maybe you're a 3 seed. Why would it? We'll worry about that down the road. But that's job number one. Win the NFC South, be playing at Raymond James Stadium in January, period. So that's before we even look even beyond anywhere else, that's where we're looking, okay? So this is a huge game as far as that. You go 5-3 here. Now, all of a sudden, Carolina, I don't think Carolina's built for the long haul, but, I mean, they're right there. And I don't think Atlanta's going away either. I know they lost to San Francisco last week, but, you know, it's not going to be – the South ain't going to win itself is what I'm trying to say. It ain't going to be like, oh, 9-8 like it was a couple years ago, or even 8-9, whatever it was. You're going to have to keep doing your job, and that, first and foremost, is winning division games, especially against division teams that are 1-6. It is not going to be easy, though. I shouldn't even say 1-6. Because that's, I guess Nick Saban would call that rat poison. We don't need to hear all week about how bad the Saints are. Because first of all, this is a team that has had vastly different home and road splits, especially Spencer Rattler. I mean, the Saints themselves, first of all, I mean, again, they're only 1-6, so their record is bad, both home and road. The home win they got, their home record is 1-3, and they're 0-3 on the road, but that's not even it. Spencer Rattler has actually not been bad this year overall. Overall, he's just okay, but it's really not even overall because you're blending two extremes, his home splits and his road splits. The PFF guys, whatever you think about PFF, the PFF guys have his passing grade, or his overall game grade, for home games, he's got an 89 PFF score. With 9 big-time throws and 3 turnover-worthy plays. And they rate, and it's, I like the way they rate big-time throws, because sometimes you throw a screen pass and you get a touchdown, like we did with Tez Johnson the other night. And, you know, we just look at how many touchdown passes a guy has. Big-time throws, and they have a way of measuring them and what constitutes a big-time throw and all that, give you a little more of a bigger picture. Same with turnover-worthy plays. Turnover-worthy plays tell you more than interceptions. An interception could be a guy ball bounced off a guy's hands, and the other team caught it. That's not the QB's fault. Or it could be the worst throw in the history of planet Earth, but the DB dropped it, and you don't get dinged for an interception when you should have. So turnover-worthy throws are more of a storyteller than just straight-up picks. Anyway, 89 PFF grade at home, one of the best in the NFL. 9 big-time throws to 3 turnover-worthy throws. On the road, a 51.7 PFF score, one of the lowest in the league. Only 2 big-time throws and 12 turnover-worthy throws. So it's night and day. So Holmes, whatever the reason is, and maybe it's just statistical noise, or maybe he's more comfortable in the Superdome or whatever, but home splits versus road splits, Spencer Rattler's been pretty decent at home. And the Saints as a whole, I know they're 1-6, but this is the NFL, man. These games are close, and they've lost close games. I mean, they lost to the Cardinals by 1 score. Lost to the 49ers by 1 score. Got blown out by the Seahawks. Okay, that was bad. Hung with the Bills on the road in Buffalo. Lost 31-19, but that was a one-score game for a lot of the game. Beat the Giants. Lost to the Patriots in a one-score game. Lost to the Bears 26-14, but again, that was a one-score game. And they led that game most of the way in the first half. Ended up losing late. The point is, even the teams that have beaten them haven't exactly been able to backpedal through it and you know, get a mani-pedi or something while the game was going. They had to work for it, and the Bucks are going to have to work for it on Sunday, especially since, you know, they're on the road. They've still got injuries to deal with. The injuries aren't nearly as bad as they were. If you looked at the injury report yesterday, and again, I'm doing my show on Thursday. On Wednesday, it had 17 names on it. That was just a walkthrough, and they're pretty conservative. They report a lot of stuff on those. But today at practice, which already took place, the only guys that are out are Chris Godwin, who is out for Sunday, Bucky Irving, who is out for Sunday, and now Hassan Reddick is a new one. He's out. Those three. Everybody else was out there besides the ones that are out. Like Luke Getteke, maybe after the bye, hopefully. And I'll tell you right now, I tweeted this on my Twitter account, at Bobby Game Day. Nothing, in my opinion, or at least maybe I'm hoping it'll be this way, but I think nothing will be more important. No, of all this injury stuff we've dealt with, nothing is going to be a bigger boon to the Bucks than getting Luke Getteke back, assuming he's fine and he's his old self. Aside from the Worf's injury at the beginning of the year when they were waiting for him to get back in there, all this other stuff, and they all suck. I hate the Cody Mauch injury. I hate the Mike Evans injury, obviously. I hate them all. Cansey, big. But they need Getteke back. They get him back, and all of a sudden that shores up the offensive line a little bit more because these games are being won and lost up front. The Bucks are not getting enough pressure, although they've done a little bit better the past, well, six quarters, the second half of the San Francisco game, and then Monday night they got, you know, I didn't think Goff was out there just without a care in the world or anything. They got after him a little bit. But they still need more, and now they're with Reddick. I mean, I don't know, you know, people were talking about Max Crosby kicking the tires on him. Supposedly Dallas already did, and then the reports came out, no, he wants to stay in Vegas. And then, okay, fine, he's off the board. They're not going to make a splash move. Hendrickson, the Bengals, now that they won the other night, even though their season's not going anywhere, they think it might, and they're not going to trade Hendrickson, so forget about him. So, you know, they could get somebody who's considered a depth guy or would be considered a depth guy under normal circumstances, but it's not going to be some splash pass rush move. The Bucks are going to go get some. It's just the guy's not out there. Those guys are hard to come by, and when teams have them, they tend not to trade them, save for Dallas. Who, by the way, now I see all these reports because Dallas has actually hung around a little bit and, you know, they're not completely out of it. It's only week 7 or week 8 now. But I heard Dallas now, they're looking to trade for a guy, like we said, Max Crosby or whoever. So wouldn't it be funny if Dallas traded the exact picks that they got for giving away Parsons just to get some other guy who isn't Parsons? Like, Why? Maybe, perhaps the guy you need, the guy you're looking for in the trade market now, perhaps he already played for you, huh? But they're out there saying they can find somebody else. I know there was off-field stuff and maybe there was some discontent or whatever, but they could have figured it out. Anyway, thinking short-term. There's short-term and long-term. Thinking short-term, week by week, and just trying to figure out the week you're in and then get to the next one, I feel pretty good about the Bucks. Okay? Thinking long-term, big picture, I'm worried. I'm worried about the offensive line. I'm worried about Getteke. I'm worried how healthy or how serious his injury is or isn't. Like I said last week, Joe has been saying, he's tweeted it, Getteke's walking around the locker room in sandals, nothing on the foot, no bandage, no wrap, no crutches, nothing, just looking like a normal person. Now, walking around is not the same as playing football, especially at that position. But at the very least, it gives you hope that maybe whatever it is, they've already, you know, determined, okay, we're going to get to the bye. Then after the bye, he's going to have a full 2 weeks, or after this Sunday, he'll have a full 2 weeks, and maybe we can get going with the Saints game in 2 weeks. But they need him back badly. And then, of course, there's Mike Evans, and that, yeah, hey, listen, that one's bad on several levels because, first of all, just from a football standpoint, they're going to miss him now. And I don't think he's his old self. I mean, certainly they've done okay without him so far because they've only had him for brief little spurts this year. But still, I mean, the attention he gets alone, you know, is a big loss not to have him out there. Just even if he's not, you know, catching a million balls, just having him out there helps the other receivers as well. But to see what Tez Johnson's been able to do, to see what they've done with Sterling Shepard, and, you know, obviously what Ibuka can do, you know, those guys are going to have to just carry the weight now because Chris Godwin's still out. And the Godwin thing, man, I mean, I hope he's back to his old self. But, you know, and we talked about it in the offseason when they did the extension. I mean, everybody loved it. Obviously, we all love Godwin. You want to see your guys around forever, but the Patriots threw a ton of money at him, supposedly. I don't know. I know it's hindsight. Although I did say it, if you go back and listen to my show back over the summer when this happened, I said it. I was like, I don't know. Do we need to like go crazy about this? You know, so they signed the big extension, and I'm worried that we've seen, I don't even say that we've seen the best of Chris Godwin. We have seen, I can already tell you that. I don't even mind him declining a little bit. We have seen the best of Chris Godwin. He's never going to be what he was, I don't think. But can he still contribute? Even that would be good. And right now the answer has been no, and through no fault of his own. And so far it continues to be. So we'll see. But then back to Mike Evans, obviously the other part of that is the personal part of it, because everybody loves him. He's been so great for this team, not just on the field, but off the field. And, you know, the whole 1,000-yard thing, and he was going to be the only guy. You know, now he stays tied. That's not that big of a deal. It was a big deal to get tied. That part was big. So I know some people criticized how the Bucs really, really shoehorned that in at the end of last season. But that was important to do, not just for Evans, but for the whole team and for morale and things like that. And they did it. And so now he's out there, and he could still be back. 2 months, they said, he's going to have the surgery. Just get it done. Obviously, he'll have time to recover from his concussion during all that as well. And yeah, it just sucks. I mean, how bad did that feel before you knew what was wrong? Because I mean, we were sitting there rewinding it, trying to figure out, because it, you know, not every headshot looks that bad. And the collarbone part you can't see anyway, but like we're rewinding the play, which I thought was pass interference, by the way. And his head hit the turf when he came down, but you see that. I was like, does he have a concussion? I thought maybe he landed on the ball, because that's happened. That hurt. Everybody ever done that? If you land on the ball, that can really, that's, I thought that might be it. Then I'm looking at his shoulders, his head, and he's just laying motionless, and you're like, oh my God. So I'm glad he's going to be okay, first and foremost, and whatever else they're able to, you know, get from him on the field is a bonus. But the main thing is that, you know, it's not as bad as it looks. It looked pretty bad when it happened, and I thought they were going to get the board out and all that stuff, and, you know, it ends up walking off. So it's like, okay, at least there's that. And it was cool seeing Levante David over there, like the, you know, the veteran guys, the guys who have been together a long time. And Levante David was right there and there with the trainers, making sure he was okay. So just really unfortunate. Again, thanks for that illegal contact call, because none of this would have happened without that. The Jahmyr Gibbs run, the Evans play, and who knows what else afterward. But those things did happen. You can't prevent that. And so that's where we're at. Like I'm telling you, don't listen to all the crap this week on Twitter or on ESPN or whatever, you know, wherever it is, whatever sports media you consume. Everybody's got these power rankings, and, oh, the Bucks, you know, they've been beating some lesser teams, but then they finally gotten with the big boys on Monday night in Detroit, and Detroit's clearly the NFC favorite. Hey, fine. They are, absolutely. No argument. Doesn't matter, okay? Like, in college football, it does matter. In college football, what people think and the way you are perceived literally makes a difference. Like, it can be the, you know, difference between making the playoffs or not, or where you're seated, all those things. And that's college football, and that's fine. In the NFL, it means nothing, okay? Some guy on Twitter can put the Bucs 16th in his power rankings, and you're like, what the hell? He's got the Bucs as they've been out of the playoffs, and they're barely in the top half. Don't get all worked up about it. Doesn't matter. The NFL uses standings and math and formulas that are cold, hard numbers. And they don't care about your power ranking. They don't care, oh, you didn't beat this team or you didn't look good enough in losing to this team. Doesn't matter, okay? What does matter, one, your record. Two, your division record, okay? Three, head-to-head against whatever other team you may be in there. Those things actually do matter in the cold, hard numbers, and that's why this is such a big game this week. I mean, it really is a sneaky big game. If they win this game, you'll feel fine. You're into the bye week. 6-2, no big deal. Lost to the two of the best teams they played, the Eagles and the Lions. All right, you know, and they got more good teams coming up. I mean, the Patriots are pretty good. The Bills are pretty good. The Rams are definitely good. That's another big one. We'll get to that one down the road. That Rams game could end up being a big one. But, you know, they did, you know, a good job. If they win, this is all hypothetical, if they win, to go 6-2 in that time. If you're 5-3, though, oh, it's going to feel bad. You're going to feel bad over the bye. You got 2 weeks of it, too, to feel bad about the Bucs if they don't go up to the Superdome and get this win. And like I said, Spencer Rattler, not bad, especially at home. You know, Chris Olave is the guy for them. He's had 71 targets in 7 games. They're targeting him 10 times a game. They have allowed 15 sacks in seven games, so hopefully the Bucs can get something going pass rush-wise. And the Saints' run defense, Bucky Irving won't be back, but Rashad White could have a big day, hopefully. And I'd like to see the Bucs really digging into the run game and the play-action game, which, by the way, you know, this was another thing that came up today. Josh Grizzard in his press conference, because 2 weeks ago against San Francisco, like Mayfield was like 11 of 12 or something like that, like something insane. In play action. And the Bucs just aren't using it much this year. And they've usually, I mean, that's been a big strength. Last year was a huge strength in their game. And Grizzard was asked about it in his press conference, and he said, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, I don't know who measures that stuff. I don't pay attention to that stuff. But you, okay, hey, listen. These are football coaches. I'm not. These guys have forgotten more football in the last 10 minutes than I'll ever know in my life. Always say that first. But to get a little specific on what he said, there are lots of people who track play action usage. And just to give you the numbers, just in case you thought it's all being made up, the Bucs, out of 32 teams, are 28th in play action usage, which is, for them especially, very low. And it's low for anybody, obviously. It's 28th out of 32. But that's not even the story. The story is that when they do use it, they're the fifth best in the NFL at it. They have incredible numbers out of play action. So it's not like, oh, it's not our thing. No, it is your thing. You're just not doing it. So I hope Josh Grizzard does have somebody measuring it. If not, he should, or at least he should be reading the people that do measure it. And understand, especially when you're having a little bit of trouble in protection, that play action can help. It's something I do want to see the Bucs use a lot more of. And it's something I think, again, I don't care what any coach says in a press conference, because that's all coach speak. And they don't need to tell us anything. They just need to go do their jobs. But yeah, play action, that needs to be more of a thing for the Bucs offense. And like I said, you can run the ball on this team. Not that running the ball effectively correlates with play action, because it doesn't, but doesn't hurt either. So you can run the ball on this team. You can run play action on this team. You can score some points this week. Bucs had a streak of 20 games in a row of 20 or more points scored, which was ended on Monday night. And that was the longest streak by any NFL team in almost 4 years. So let's start another one this Sunday, 4:05 in New Orleans. Bucs Saints. There's been a lot of chatter if you're into the whole, you know, smack talk thing, which again doesn't matter at all, but it's fun. But there's a whole lot of chatter out there about, like, you know, Baker Mayfield in his press conference said he doesn't like the Saints, said they play dirty, blah, blah, blah. Then if you were on Twitter, you saw all the back and forth. And then Saints fans saying, oh, you know, Bucs fans, man, they just never stop trying to make of the Saints a rival. Saints fans don't think about the Bucs, man. Like, stop trying to make it a rivalry. It's like, our rivalry is the Falcons, and we don't think about the Bucs at all. And you guys are obsessed with making this a rivalry. And then Bucs fans come back with this, that, and the other. And you're right. I mean, the Bucs probably don't rank in the Saints' top three rivalries. Atlanta probably would be number one. The salary cap would probably be number two, and the salary cap hell there. That's a hell of a rivalry there. And then an aversion of being above 500, you know, a 500 record would be another huge rivalry. The Saints probably fight tooth and nail all the time in their own minds. So yeah, maybe the Bucs don't rank that high. That's fine, but it doesn't matter. All that matters is getting the win in New Orleans on Sunday, getting your division record to 2-0, getting to 6-2, and finding a way to get to the bye. Because when they get to the bye, every team says this, but in the particular, the Bucs have had, with the injury issues they've had, quite a bit to deal with. It's something they're going to need. And it's something that we'll all be very, very pleased and relaxed for about 13 days, or maybe 12 days, so we get ready for that Patriots game, if they can get through this one. But it will not be easy. I mean, tell yourself right now, mentally prepare yourself. The Bucs might win, but even if they do, they may have to fight tooth and nail, and there's been a lot of one-possession games, and this could be yet another one. So I don't care how they do it, as long as they do it. All right. So with that said, thanks for listening. Thanks to the Joes, joebucksfan.com, the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio, for Bucs coverage. It's a privilege to be on the site, and I thank the Joes every week for letting me be on there. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the beautiful fall weather. Be safe. Have fun. Talk to you next weekend, wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucs.